Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Greenland or bust? Who would have thought Donald Trump's drive to acquire Greenland would become a defining issue for the Global North and the Transatlantic Alliance? Who would have thought the so-called rules-based Western order would come to an end over the geopolitics of the Arctic? Crosstalking Greenland, I'm joined by my guest Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He's the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Stockholm, we have Mats Nielsen. He is a senior analyst at Dissident Club. And in Germany, we cross to Konstantin von Hofmeister. He is author of Esoteric Trumpism and Multipolarity, as well as founder and director of Multipolar Press. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Daniel first. So who would have thought, Daniel, Take it over.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, when it first came out in the Trump administration earlier last year, it was sort of viewed as kind of a quirky, that's sort of a Trump thing. We never thought that it would arise again in such a serious and sustained way. But somehow, perhaps emboldened by the Venezuela operation, President Trump has put it back on the front burner. And they're very, very clear about it. I mean, his top aide, Stephen Miller, had an interview, which I found astonishing. He simply said, in this world now, might makes right. Yep. We can do it. We can take it. And we damn will take it. So it really is a stake in the heart of any kind of multipolar order, at least for the moment. But it remains to be seen what will happen. How this will take place.
Yeah, Matt, what's really peculiar about this story is that the United States doesn't have to acquire it, doesn't have to conquer it, it doesn't have to buy it. It already has agreements with Denmark and Greenland to do whatever it pretty much wants security-wise. So there are other motives here. Maybe I could invoke the name James Polk, the president under his administration, in which the United States doubled its size. Maybe this is what it's all about. It's a legacy thing, because the security element of it, just on its face, doesn't make any sense. Mats?
No, definitely not. This, I think this is a classical case of imperial hubris. And I guess the U.S. as a hegemon has provided security guarantees and a feigned respect for sovereignty long enough. And Trump's Greenland move has signaled a shift to purely sub-zero sum hegemony games, which is inherently destabilizing for everyone. And it tells every nation that even as an ally, your assets are only secure as long as Washington doesn't
exactly
covet them.
Exactly.
So it's classical. If you look at it from a historical point of view, it's classical imperial hubris.
Well, Konstantin, this is what you get when you accept limited sovereignty. Being part of the EU, member states limit their sovereignty. Being part of NATO, you limit your sovereignty. And so when someone pulls a caper like this, you don't really have the tools at your disposal to protect yourself. This should be a lesson about joining alliances when you're subservient. Konstantin.
Well, I absolutely agree, of course, because now it's becoming apparent that the Western Europeans, they're not actually partners in the Transatlantic Alliance. They're merely satellites. And I think they're now slowly realizing it. I mean, they've always been satellites, but they always thought of themselves as partners, which obviously was not the case. And now their subservient role is really coming to the fore. And I actually absolutely agree with you. I think it's totally about legacy. It's like a trophy for Trump, basically, because he's very vain, it seems to me. And he was obsessed with getting the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, he even accepted it from the actual winner the other day. And I think he really wants to be remembered as a president.
Oh, he will be remembered. He will be remembered. I can guarantee you that. Keep going.
I think he wants to be remembered as the president that enlarged the United States. It's sort of like make America great again in this sense, you know, because he literally is making it great in terms of size if he actually manages to take Greenland, which I think he will, because I think he's quite serious about it. And he's not like many people are saying now, he's not the only person pressing the issue. You know, there are many, many other people in the administration. So I think it's really moving forward now. And actually, I predicted this like a year ago. I wrote an essay about this, that it's exactly what you said. It's basically the new age of empires where back in the 19th century, where we have multipolarity, but it's like a Darwinian multipolarity. Mm. Basically, the might is right, and it is back to spheres of influence, and true sovereignty only belong to civilization states. And so far, we only have four, which is United States, Russia, India, and China.
Well, Daniel, Trump is going to do this because he can. And there's not much that's going to stop him. I mean, considering his quote-unquote respect for the law, for the Constitution, for domestic politics, it's just being appropriated to foreign policy now. He's doing it because he can, and he sees it as an easy, easy win.
Well, I mean, he's less a president than sort of a predatory real estate person. I mean, he's going around the neighborhood, i.e. the global community, and finding distressed properties and saying, I'll take that. I'll buy that for 20 bucks. I'll buy it for pennies on the dollar, and I'll take it. And that's just in his nature. I mean, he's sort of become the meme, whereas if you've seen it, where the Israeli settler takes the Palestinian home, and she says, you can't take my home. And he says, if I don't take it, someone else is going to take it.
Yep.
What's the big deal? That's literally what he's become. If I don't take this, Russia's going to take it. China's going to take it. So why shouldn't I have it? Pennies on the dollar. It's a good deal, and I'm going to do it. I mean, the Americans aren't used to this in a president. We've had a lot of weird presidents. We just had a very weird president. But we've never experienced this sort of presidency. And as with Biden, the people around him are bolstering some of what I would consider some of the worst aspects of his personality for their own aggrandizement.
You know, Matt, there's the cry all through Europe that this may destroy NATO, which everyone watching this program knows I have no problem with that proposition. But is NATO really being tested here? Are the Europeans being in such a subjugated state in any position to really put up any resistance? I hear in the media that, you know, ravaging American assets in Europe and all that. Well, governments don't own those assets. It's almost all private. And I don't see them taking this leap. Go ahead, Mats.
Before I answer that, I would just like to remind everyone of what President Trump said in an interview in 2021 for the book The Divider. He said, why don't we have that? And he looked at it as a real estate developer. He said, you take a look at the map. I'm a real estate developer. I look at a corner, I say, I've got to get that store for the building that I'm building, etc. It's not that different. I love maps. I always have. I always said, look at the size of this. It's massive. That should be a part of the United States. End quote. So, I mean, it's like previously said here, but it's in his DNA. He wants to develop, he looks at the map, and then he grabs it. Damn be the consequences. And of course, the consequences for NATO are dire because there's no strategic value from a U.S. perspective for destroying that strategic calm that has been between the United States and Europe thanks to the NATO alliance. Now, if you destroy that and the European Union tries to start counterbalancing the U.S., suddenly you might wake up to a situation where due to democratic changes in the leadership in Europe, European nations might actually look to Hungary and say, well, perhaps, you know, we should start talking to Russia and perhaps China once again. You never know, but it doesn't make sense to do what Trump is doing from any perspective.
Well, even from today's standpoint, which I know will be very difficult for some people to accept, even this day, the Europeans should actually seriously consider talking to the Russians again, because it's Greenland now, Constantine. What's to stop Trump for looking at Iceland?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to take Iceland. I think it's a bit far-fetched. I mean, if he actually...
Oh, come on, thought Greenland was far-fetched. Right. Go ahead, keep going.
I never thought Greenland was far-fetched. I mean, I predicted this, like I said, like a year ago. I knew he was serious. But, like, if he was actually... I mean, people are saying that he's acting like a dictator or like a king, but if he really declared himself emperor and his son his successor and dissolved the republic and really ushered in the Imperium Americanum, then yeah, maybe he could just invade Greenland like hardcore style, but obviously that's not going to happen. So I think it's far-fetched. I think Greenland, yes, for sure. And the Europeans definitely won't do anything. I mean, we already saw this right now with Merz, Friedrich Merz, and Germany when Trump threatened 10% tariff on all the EU states that sent troops to Greenland for this exercise. And immediately Friedrich Merz recalled the German troops, like right after the announcement. But of course, he didn't admit it. He said, well, it was well, because the exercise was
They were there for less than a day. Right. They were there for exactly. less than a day. And they right. took and they took a commercial airline out. That's how fast they wanted to leave.
Yeah. But Merz didn't admit it. He just said they left because the exercise was over. Right. But well, the point is there's no unity in the European Union. So when Trump threatens China, China can threaten back and Trump backs down. But there's no unity because it's not a sovereign pole, the European Union, because it's very divisive in the member states. There has to be consensus and it's very difficult to get consensus. So when the United States threatens the European Union with 10% tariff, they can't just threaten back with 10% tariff because everybody has to agree. Because I remember like the last time this happened, the United States threatened the EU with 20% tariffs. And then they had a debate, a discussion with Trump, and the compromise was, okay, only 10% tariffs. It's crazy, right? I mean, they're literally submissive, like total vassal states, basically, in my opinion. And I don't think they're going to put up any resistance based on their track record, which is quite poor, in my opinion.
Well, Constantine, we're almost out of time for this part of the program. How is this going to affect EU policy in other areas? Would the EU start reaching out to China? We've already mentioned possibly talking to Russia.
Yeah, I think that would be, of course, the best decision the Europeans could make if they had a sort of like rapprochement with Russia and sort of an alliance with China at the same time. I mean, if you had the Europeans, the Russians, and the Chinese together, basically, against the U.S., well, Trump would totally lose. I just don't see the Europeans...
Hold that thought, Constantine. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue more discussion on Trump's plans for Greenland. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Greenland. Okay, let's go back to Daniel. Daniel, one of the things that's really interesting to observe here, the word imperialism has been brought up in the program. And also in my introduction, I talked about the global north. Now, the global north has lost its impunity. I mean, it follows the United States in its foreign wars around the world for the most part. But now the global north, particularly Europe, they're being subject the same way the global south has been for centuries, okay? So they've lost their privileges, and this is something the Europeans cannot comprehend. Daniel.
Well, and it's a nightmare of their own making. They had reliable, cheap Russian energy, which was the backbone of the German economy, the greatest post-war economy in the world. Everyone wanted things made in Germany. And they decided for ideological reasons, this sort of Russophobia baked in, that they're going to jettison all of this and put all of their cards in the U.S. I mean, Trump is fond of saying you have no cards left. He said it to Zelensky in February of last year. Europe has no cards left. They've played all their cards on replacing cheap Russian energy with expensive American energy. And when Trump says, no, I'm going to sanction that, they're literally, they have their last card. They have absolutely nowhere to go financially. So the smart move would be to try to make amends with Russia, and maybe it'll take some elections in Europe to get some people like Merz and Starmer out who are completely compromised. But nevertheless, that's the only move for them to make right now. And I don't think they're ready to make it at this point, at least not the majority of the larger European countries.
Mats, what about European unity? Because this would be a point that you'd think everyone would come together and kind of bite the bullet. But there's a lot of people, like people, my guests on this program, including yourself, is that they themselves brought this on. Their foreign policy choices, their domestic policy choices. This is why we're here. It's their choices that have made them weak and weaker as time goes on.
Well, there is one obvious factor that plays in, and that is the silence of the European nations on previous U.S. transgressions in relation to international law. I mean, had there been a more coherent upholding of these values previously, it might have become more difficult. But now the Europeans are standing there as naked as when they were born, because everyone knows the hypocrisy which they speak in referrals to the current shown aggression. It's just like they say, the chickens have come home to roost, and suddenly on the receiving end are the Europeans. And there is, on a two-level game theory, there is nothing that the European Union can do about this unless they find some kind of strength in a greater unity. And as previously stated, that is not going to come anytime soon, since Europe is basically a union of warring tribes. It's not going to happen.
Constantine, there's a lot of hyperbole out there right now, and Donald Trump is leading it, obviously. But there's the word, the D word, the divorce word is being mentioned. Can we take those people seriously at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's even possible for the Europeans to completely divorce themselves or separate themselves from the United States. I mean, if just looking at Germany, there are thousands and thousands of German troops in several, there are thousands and thousands of U.S. troops in several U.S. bases in Germany. There are American nuclear weapons, I mean, on German soil, basically, completely controlled by the United States. I mean, this is not a sovereign country, and Germany hasn't been a sovereign country for decades. I mean, I would say ever since the end of World War II, basically. It's completely subservient to the interests of the United States. I mean, Nord Stream 2 comes to mind. That was clearly the work of the United States, the destruction of it. And I think the German government was probably aware of it, that the United States did it, but they didn't even complain, actually. You know, they're pretending they don't really know who did it. And then, as my colleague mentioned, the complete rejection of Russian energy, thereby destroying the German economy, again, in the interests of the United States, pretty much proves that there is no real European pole in the multipolar world. And again, it's very, very divisive. And also, I would argue that the concept of international law, quote unquote, has always been a fiction. I think it never really existed, international law. It was always used as a tool by the global North, by the collective West, to basically impose its will on other peoples, but it completely disregarded, quote unquote, international law when it suited its own interests. And I mean, Denmark was one of the very first countries that recognized the independence of Kosovo, right? I mean, I find it quite ironic. So I mean, what goes around comes around, I suppose. Yep.
Yeah, Daniel, Ursula von der Leyen talked about the right of sovereignty and self-determination, but the EU is remarkably quiet in what's happened in Gaza for the last 2 years.
Absolutely. I mean, my colleague is absolutely correct about this. You know, the hypocrisy is so thick with most Europeans, with many Europeans, at least this current generation of leadership, that it's hard to not take a little bit of pleasure in their downfall, to be honest with you. But speaking as an American, one of the things that strikes me about this move on Greenland is how unpopular it is in the United States. President Trump hasn't even tried to make the case to the American people. A couple of polls came out last week. One was a CNN poll showing that three quarters of the Americans, 75% of Americans, do not they opposed Trump's move on Greenland. Quinnipiac University, a famous U.S. university for polling, they also did a poll. They showed that 86% of Americans oppose any use of force to take Greenland, and a full 55% of Americans don't even want us to buy it. So he hasn't convinced the American people about it, but he's always going on about this. We're going to take the minerals. We're going to take the oil from Venezuela. We. What it's all about, though, is privatizing the profits while socializing the costs of these adventures. And that's what's happening. You know, there was a study that came out from the Kiel Institute in Germany, determining that the American consumer pays 96% of the costs of these tariffs. These are hidden taxes. So what we're also seeing under the Trump administration is a massive transfer of wealth from the middle and working classes to the extreme rich, to the donor class, which is what keeps Trump alive.
Well, Daniel, is this just bread and circuses then? Doubling the size of the United States. Well, in this day and age, I mean, if you can get mineral rights, why do you have to own the country? I mean, this 19th century concept of imperialism doesn't fit, Daniel.
Yeah, but it isn't the 19th century concept of imperialism, because it only enriches a very specific layer of the elites in the U.S. And I don't have rose-colored glasses about the previous iteration of imperialism, but nevertheless, there was an obligation to raise society. What we're seeing now is the donor class being enriched. We saw all of the oil executives being brought down there saying, you guys are going to get rich. We just spent a couple of billion dollars kidnapping this guy, and now you guys are going to get rich. And the same thing is true now with the minerals and the rare earths, et cetera. I mean, I didn't get a check from Venezuela from stealing the 50 million barrels of oil. I don't know, Peter, maybe they sent you one in Russia, but I didn't get one. I'm paying higher prices buying things that come from tariffed countries. And that's what's happening. And the Golden Dome, that we must have Greenland to build the Golden Dome, it's an absolute boondoggle. It will never work, but it will enrich the military-industrial complex.
Mats, what is the future of the European Union, do you think, as this unfolds here? Because they're shown to be, first of all, it's probably the weakest leadership that we've ever seen in decades, for sure. In my lifetime, I would say. And they don't have any answers. They have a WhatsApp group called Washington Center or something like that. I mean, this is how they govern.
There is no real governance of the European Union. There never has been in any real shape, way, or form. The problem now is that Europe is starting to talk about a tighter union. Now, in order to stand firm against both the threat of Russia and America, they're starting to discuss in Brussels that maybe we need a European federation with a European military initiative that was floated on Tuesday of this week. And it's just one of those things where it's so blatant how unconnected the politicians in the Brussels ivory tower are with the sentiments of the voters. There are very few people between the Madeira Islands and the north of Finnish Laponia that would see a stronger European federation as a solution to basically any problem, because the history of the European countries go centuries back, and that they are not going to be threatened into a federation which no one believes in. So there is a very bleak, on my part, assessment of the future of the European Union. I personally believe it might actually end up with having regional power centers, for example, a Nordic-Baltic area that will join together and become a kind of a counterforce or a force to have dialogue with or whatever it may be. But a stronger European federation in order to kind of substitute the American power that has been lent to the European Union? Never.
Constantine, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I generally agree with this. I think the European Union is becoming more and more irrelevant, on the global stage, and it's basically losing credibility in the eyes of the global South, because like actors like China and India, they see how the European Union is reacting to American threats, and all they see is weakness, basically, on blatant display, and it doesn't look good. I mean, it doesn't look like these are trustworthy actors, basically, because people want to see strength, they want to see power, projection, you know, only this basically commands respect. But a structure like the European Union that constantly, basically, I mean, almost like kisses the boots of its American masters, almost, I mean, loses all respect, basically, in the eyes of the world, because how can it be respected? In my opinion, it's not possible.
Daniel, is Trump going to pull this off? Is he going to get Greenland?
Well, I don't think there's anything to stop him at this point. Certainly not Congress. But, you know, our mutual friend Peter Larry Johnson has a piece out this morning where he talked about Trump being the greatest confabulator of all presidents. And I think that's true. Someone who makes things up and actually believes they're true. And that's why we have the I solved eight wars, which is absolute nonsense. And that's why we have this, damn it, I didn't get the Nobel Prize, so I'm going to get Greenland. You know, I mean, I want an Oompa Loompa, and I want it now. That's literally what's happening. He's making things up out of the blue. And it's frankly starting to become alarming, I think, to the American people to see a president who clearly seemed there's something wrong with this person. And every time he opens his mouth, something really crazy comes out. I thought we were done with Joe Biden, but it's actually getting worse, I think, in this administration.
Okay, on that note, gentlemen, to be continued, the saga of Greenland is ahead of us here. I want to thank my guests in Germany, Stockholm, and in Lake Jackson. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.